Belief in the nation's division is not a partisan issue, as Democrats, Republicans, and Independents all agree in similar proportions. Americans can only seem to agree on one thing, that they really, deeply disagree. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Capital Sana'a hosted the first scientific conference on cancerous diseases with a focus on gynecological cancers, attended by a large number of specialized doctors and academics under the sponsorship of the Yemeni Health Ministry.
We thought about enhancing the role of person, individual roles, communities, to be sharing us our concern about their health, by educating them, by raising awareness about the signs and symptoms of cancers.
Since 2015, the number of cancer cases in Yemen has increased rapidly. According to the Undersecretary of the Health Ministry, Ali Jahath, he says this is due to the prohibited arms used by the U.S.-Saudi coalition over the past years.
That they have used forbidden armaments in bombing Yemen.
Yemeni army says it has discovered large quantities of U.S.-built munitions at the positions of Saudi mercenaries while conducting clean-up operations in the provinces of Marib and Al-Bayda. Saudi Arabia and a number of its regional allies launched a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015 in order to bring for Riyadh friendly President Abdurrabbu Mansour Hadi back to power. Riyadh is the largest buyer of American-made weaponry. Trump signed an arms deal worth $110 billion with Saudi Arabia in May 2017. The Saudi military aggression against Yemen, coupled with a naval blockade, has killed hundreds of thousands of people and plunged Yemen into what UN says the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Military camps have been set up to help overwhelmed reception facilities, but local authorities say the government is not doing enough. The island's president, Antonio Morales, has denounced what he calls the Ministry of Interior's continued contempt for migrants and the island, demanding the resignation of those responsible. Driven by economic hardship, around 17,000 migrants have arrived on the Canary Islands this year. According to Spain's Interior Ministry, that's a 1,000% increase from 2019. In 2019, 1,885 migrants drowned in the Mediterranean Sea, and 2020's death toll is fast approaching 1,000. Open Arms, the only NGO permitted to carry out search and rescue missions at present, wrote on Twitter, "Despite the enormous commitment of our medical team, a six-month-old baby has just died. We requested an urgent evacuation for him and other people in serious conditions, but he didn't make it. How much pain and sorrow." The International Criminal Court has sued the European Union, saying member states should be prosecuted for the deaths of thousands of migrants who have drowned in the Mediterranean. In its 245-page document, the ICC says the EU's deterrence-based migration policy, which came into force after 2014, sacrifices the lives of migrants in distress at sea to dissuade others from seeking a safe haven in Europe. Bianca Rahimi, London.
As the G20 summit is about to kick off in Saudi Arabia, Amnesty International is calling on the attendees of the meeting to take the kingdom to task for its appalling human rights record. The Crown had planned to promote its contentious reform agenda to the world and show Saudi Arabia is open for business. However, Riyadh summit will be solely held in the form of a virtual meeting due to the coronavirus restrictions. Amnesty International is urging G20 leaders to join the call for the immediate release of a number of jailed women's rights activists arrested in 2018.
What we said on the eve of the G20 is that Saudi Arabia's real change makers, the activists who spearheaded campaigns for women's rights, are in jail or facing trial. Riyadh is an inappropriate host.
Since assuming the G20 presidency in December last year, Riyadh has publicized new initiatives on women's employment opportunities, claiming that the kingdom is strongly committed to empowering women and girls.
On the occasion of the G20 summit, the Embassy of Saudi Arabia in Italy has organized a webinar on females' inclusion in society. Human rights groups have slammed these initiatives as mere attempts to reshape the kingdom's image through expensive PR campaigns, presenting Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman as a reformer.
The Crown has spent billions of dollars hosting major political, entertainment, cultural and sporting events as a deliberate strategy to deflect from the country's image as a pervasive human rights violator, to whitewash its dismal rights record.
Saudi Arabia is using the G20 meeting in Riyadh to build legitimacy. Bear in mind that bin Salman is behind the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi and the Yemen war. The kingdom is cashing in on Donald Trump's staunch support all along the way.
Saudi Arabia is the first Arab nation to host the G20 summit. The meeting of the leaders of the world's most industrialized countries and emerging economies will be held on November 21st and 22nd. Max Civili, Rome.
A high-level conference focusing on the EU's treatment of refugees has just concluded in the European Parliament, Brussels. During the event, the 27-nation bloc's migration and asylum policy was slated. It appears a new crisis is emerging at sea as desperate African refugees try to reach EU territory.
Look what is already happening in the Atlantic. Hundreds of people are trying to reach the Canary Islands. Through the Atlantic, one of the most perilous routes in the world, they are dying there.
The EU unveiled a new asylum policy in September, but critics say the focus is on closing the bloc's borders instead of respecting international law and upholding the EU's much trumpeted values.
Our staff has spoken out against policies which are directly responsible for this unimaginable human suffering. Time and again, European nations and institutions have failed to act on their duty.
Many organizations insist the EU should be viewing immigration as an opportunity rather than a threat.
Behind all those people, there are hidden skills. We need to identify those skills and to use those skills in our European labor market.
The EU is paying billions of euro to Turkey and several African nations to try and prevent refugees from traveling. During the Brussels event, Ankara was accused of using the refugee crisis to advance geopolitical goals.
It is wrong to endorse the popular view of Turkey as a victim of the war in Syria. Turkey is on war in Syria since its very last start.
However, Ankara is highly critical of the European Union over its handling of the problem. Refugees continue to die in the Mediterranean. Those who make it are held in very poor conditions on Greek islands and now Spanish islands too.
Perhaps the most compelling argument being made by rights groups for the EU to do more is because the West has fueled so much conflict in the Middle East and Africa, effectively playing a big role in helping to create the refugee crisis. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
As Americans grapple with how or whether to gather with loved ones this holiday season, the roughly 2 million people confined in the nation's prisons and jails face an even grimmer challenge: how to stay alive inside a system being ravaged by the coronavirus pandemic. What you just heard was from an article authored by the editorial board of the New York Times under the heading, "America is Letting the Coronavirus Rage Through Prisons." Please stay with us for more of the New York Times article. It's both a moral failure and a public health one. Like the nation overall, United States correctional facilities are experiencing record spikes in coronavirus infections this fall. During the week of 17th of November, there were 13,657 new coronavirus infections reported across the state and federal prison systems, according to the Marshall Project, which has been tracking these numbers since March. The previous week saw 13,676 new cases. These are by far the highest weekly tolls reported since the pandemic began. With winter descending, the situation threatens to grow bleaker still. The American penal system is a perfect breeding ground for the virus. Squabbles over face masks and wearing masks and social distancing are essentially moot inside overcrowded facilities, many of them old and poorly ventilated, with tight quarters and with hygiene standards that are difficult to maintain. Uneven testing, inadequate medical resources, and constant churn off of staff members, visitors, and inmates further speed the transmission of the virus. Cruder still, inmates suffer disproportionately from comorbidities, such as high-level, high blood pressure, and asthma, putting them at an elevated risk for complications and death. 8 months into the pandemic, the precise shape and scope of the devastation remains difficult to pin down, but the available data is heartbreaking. As of mid-November, more than 196,600 coronavirus infections had been reported among state and federal prisons in the United States. More than 1,450 of those prisoners had died. The case rates among inmates are more than four times as high as those of the general public, and the death rate is more than twice as high. Inmates are not the only ones trapped with the virus. The correctional system employs more than 685,000 people. These are prison guards, nurses, and so on. There have been more than 45,470 reported coronavirus infections and 98 deaths among staff members to date. Their case rates are three times as high as for the general public. Of course, these are the reported cases. The real numbers are assumed to be higher. the coronavirus ripples outward from these hotspots, engulfing the families and communities of inmates and workers. The coronavirus does not respect prison walls any more than it respects state or national borders. It will not be confined. This spread poses a particular problem for rural communities. 40% of prisons are in counties with fewer than 50,000 residents, which typically lack the healthcare infrastructure to deal with such outbreaks. Even a modest outbreak can quickly overwhelm local hospitals with scant numbers of ventilators and intensive care unit beds. Local jails face additional challenges. Whilst prisons report much larger case numbers, the rapid turnover in jails, where many people are confined for only a few days or even few hours, enable the virus to circulate swiftly between inmates and the larger community, and makes tracking all that much more difficult. In a report last month on outbreaks in the Mountain West, the New York Times noted that in Cascade County, infections at the local jail made up about a quarter of all known cases in the county. Over 2 months, the facility knowingly released 29 people who were considered actively infected. As with so much about the pandemic, this is a problem that should have been dealt with more aggressively early on. There was a call for reducing overcrowding through early release and other decarceration measures. While some progress has been made, it has been uneven and inadequate. Prisons and jails experience declines in total population, approximately 11% of the incarcerated population in the first half of 2020, according to a report on decarceration put out by the U.S. National Academies of Sciences, Engineering and Medicine. The report notes that these reductions appear to be mainly the result of declines in arrests, jail bookings and prison admissions related to lockdowns and the closure of state and local courts. It continues, the releases among sentenced jail and prison populations that have occurred have, for the most part, occurred on a case-by-case basis and have been procedurally slow and not well-suited to crisis situations. While many jails saw a population drop during the first few months of the pandemic, the numbers of people being held in jails began climbing again over the summer, according to a September briefing by the Prison Policy Initiative, which analyzed 4,451 county jails. In 88 counties, jail populations are higher now than they were before the pandemic, the briefing notes. Some states have taken legislative action to speed the decarceration process. A bill signed by New Jersey's governor last month permits prisoners with less than a year left on their sentences to be released up to 8 months early. This has already prompted the release of more than 2,000 people, with another 1,000 or more releases anticipated. All too often, though, continued foot dragging or dysfunction by prison officials requires the courts to step in. In the spring and summer, the San Quentin State Prison in California had a major coronavirus outbreak. Built in the mid-1800s and early 1900s, the outdated facility suffered from overcrowding, inadequate medical staffing, exceedingly poor ventilation, extraordinarily close living quarters, and inadequate sanitation, according to a panel of medical experts from the University of California at Berkeley, who were brought in to assess the situation at the prison in June. But by late July, the number of active cases had topped 1,600. Tents were erected to house the sick. Before the outbreak faded, around 2,200 inmates had confirmed coronavirus infections, and 28 inmates had died. In addition, 298 staff members were infected with the virus, resulting in one death. The problem continued to fester In late October, a state appeals court ruled that the prison authorities' efforts to address the issue had been insufficient and that inmates' constitutional protection from cruel and unusual punishment was still being violated. To deal with the emergency, the prison was ordered to cut its population by around one half through a mix of releases and transfers. It should be noted that the original outbreak was sparked by the transfer to St. Quentin Correctional Facility of infected inmates from another prison. Clearly, more needs to be done. The report by the National Academies outlines best practices for reducing the incarcerated population, broken down into short-term and long-term solutions. The suggested measures start with a systemic commitment to diversion efforts such as non-custodial penalties for minor infractions, including probation and parole violations, and the limiting of pretrial detentions through means such as reducing or eliminating bail. In addition to offering guidance on a bolder decarceration effort, the report stresses the importance of minimizing risk to the families and communities involved, such as offering testing prior to release, a place to quarantine in the community, and examination of parole and probation policies and procedures. More comprehensive and more standardized testing and reporting requirements are also needed. Managing this kind of crisis is not a one-and-done effort, the report emphasizes. It is a process requiring sustained engagement with a wide array of actors at all levels. It is all too easy for many Americans to ignore the horrors of what is happening inside the nation's prisons and jails. Inmates are isolated from the broader population, their suffering kept out of sight. But their welfare in this pandemic remains inextricably linked to everyone else's. The nation's continued failure to bring the coronavirus to heel among this vulnerable population is both a public health catastrophe and a moral one as well.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghodde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor Israel.
Majh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on November 3rd, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference on the occasion of the birthday anniversaries of the Holy Prophet of Islam and Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq. Greetings be upon them, and which coincides this year with the National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance and Unity Week.
The incidents related to insulting the Holy Quran and the Holy Prophet have frequently occurred in Western countries. It indicates that that civilization and culture and that modern jahiliya, ignorance, is really dark and wild in its nature and in its reality. Of course, they are hiding this savagery. That is because they are equipped with science and technology. They cover their savagery up with science and technology, and they hide it this way. They appear in public by uttering civilized words with a humanistic appearance and by wearing ties and perfume. thus covering up their inner savagery. So, Islam and the Holy Prophet are not harmed this way. But this is a means so that you and I can gain a deeper understanding of that civilization. That civilization is really a wild civilization. It has also created a disastrous situation for its nations.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want or need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith to be stronger.
In the present time, even after the passage of several centuries from the beginning of that civilization during the Renaissance, you can witness inequality, poverty, injustice, and moral decadence in European countries, in the US, and in those countries which follow them. This is the nature of that civilization and culture. This was about the first issue. As for Unity Week, today, more than ever, the importance of Imam's initiative has become clear. The day when our magnanimous Imam announced Unity Week, and the day when he announced the unity of Islamic denominations in their general, political, and social orientations, many real addressees of the message could not understand its significance. Many officials in Islamic countries did not understand how important the message was. Many did not understand it, and many defied it.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
the debate.
Struck a Saudi Aramco oil distribution facility in the Red Sea city of Jeddah. Now, this is considered a major achievement for the Ansarullah fighters, who accused Saudi Arabia of waging an uneven war against them. In this edition of the debate, we will look at why Saudi Arabia is continuing a war that it is losing, and whether it can even continue this war when it is dealing with an economic downturn to support a very expensive MBS adventure.
The Yemeni army says it has fired a winged Qut 2 type missile that has struck a Saudi Aramco oil company distribution station in the kingdom's Red Sea city of Jeddah.
The strike was very accurate, and ambulances and fire engines rushed to the target.
The army spokesman described the attack as a response to Saudi crimes and aggression against Yemen. He warned foreign companies working in Saudi Arabia to exercise caution as operations against the kingdom's interests will continue. This is not the first time that the Aramco facilities have come under Yemeni attacks. In September 2019, the Yemeni military claimed responsibility for strikes on Saudi oil plants that knocked out more than half of the kingdom's output. The Yemenis say such retaliatory attacks are to push Saudi Arabia to end its devastating war on the impoverished nation that began in March 2015. The onslaught has killed tens of thousands of Yemeni people, many of them women and children. According to the United Nations, Yemen is faced with the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, with nearly 80% of the country's population in need of humanitarian assistance, including more than 12